Father, we do just come before you, Father, let us lift up request. Ruach HaKodesh, come lead us, teach us, guide us, that it is alive and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, that it can divide asunder. Father, for the things that we have heard that just are not so, the things we have lodged there, that it could root them out, that we would know the truth and the truth. Father, also for the world, for the Middle East, for Israel during this time, would you just continue to lead, guide, and protect, and would you thank you for just making a divide and letting people have to make a choice. Be with us and have wisdom.
Finally,
for the moment.
For the moment, there's a ceasefire.
When Congress says and votes, we won't stop you from doing stuff to Iran anymore, or not anymore, but at this time, go ahead. That makes me nervous.
When who says that?
Congress voted yesterday not to stop Trump for striking over there, which makes me a little...
Is somebody else coming, or is that, again, just posturing for Iran to show that... Now, that doesn't mean that Iran's not always the brightest at what they do, but it may be, you know, okay, this is it. If you do, we are going to.
That's true, too.
Which is pretty much what Trump had told them. At the moment, we're not for a regime change, according to Trump, but we know where you live, we know your address, we know your mama's address.
Well, didn't he call for a regime change? Regime can't make it.
If they can't. But when they first bombed, they supposedly had diplomats reach out and tell them we're not for a regime. Our intention is not regime change at this time.
Okay.
It was if you continue, and so maybe this was trying to back up the threat that, okay, we really are ready this time. Because after our last leadership, I would imagine they're questioning our resolve, which has long been the problem, in my opinion. It's the 80-pound weakling taunting the school bully because he thinks they're not going to do anything. And America has long had the ability... Not that we should take that chance. And that, again, causes the loss of life, the disruptions. We happen to have Israel. At the same time, that we'll both say enough, amazing to the quietness out of other world leaders and have been eerily quiet.
Iran had conversion site, the conversion. Other military capabilities were what was most surprised.
Right.
So, countries around the world realizing that nuclear warfare next power move, or don't get involved, one or the other.
Yeah.
Either go all out or don't do it at all. Not that that's... The United States should not have struck the powers, the facilities, but that is the message that was portrayed.
Yeah.
If you, there were 200, I believe, can't remember which one was stated, of enriched uranium that is not accounted for somewhere in Iran. Enough to make, set their minds to it. Before and after the enrichment, for the purposes of what the world does not see. The bunker buster bombs, whether they were able to dig deep enough to fully obliterate, as Trump says, or whether they just damaged, there is no doubt that they damaged the sites.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody has admitted to that. Iran says, oh, it wasn't that bad. United States and Israel says, oh, it was the worst thing ever. And the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. how far were they able to penetrate the mountains? How deep were they able to go? Nobody knows except for the U.S. Israeli spies and the Iranians who received the damage. But either way, if Iran does choose to have a nuclear bomb, they know how deep to dig their tunnels next time.
Well, they knew how deep to dig it this time because the bunker busters supposedly went down 60 meters and the enrichment tunnels were thought to be dug at 80 meters. So they already were, in their minds, safe from the bunker busters, which is why they supposedly deployed two for each site. But that requires much more precision and timing and expertise to drop one on top of another. And they're assuming the first one would go 60, the second one would then
go another 60
to be 120 and eradicate it. That's nice in theory. It looks pretty on paper.
Whether the strikes on the nuclear facility, if Iran was only a few weeks away to a few months, definitely slowed down that timeline. But again, you asked me mulling ambitions of for all countries in the world.
Well, and
there are more regimes than just getting nuclear weapons.
Yeah. Well, and Iran has proxies that have been widely known for years to do geniusy stuff. So the...
And then a few to give them.
Yeah.
Save a rabbit. Yeah, you know, you didn't really hurt us. Someone will just give them a glad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But again, with some of the actors in the region, and no one ever talks so much about the belief that men and Muslims have that a worldwide cataclysmic apocalyptic event will precede their return to Messiah, their return to
Mahdi.
Yeah.
The 13th Imam.
Who is our... pretty darn similar to our
Antichrist. Their description.
So help get everything back.
In the West count nuclear deterrence. Well, nobody's going to nuke because everybody's going to lose in that situation. Well, no, that you count on people who have the same value system you do, and the same value of life that you do, and the same, therefore, it's deterrent. It's like carrying a weapon. If everybody's armed, that should be deterrent. You know, if you pull your arm, five people are going to pull it and shoot you. Well, that only works with people who are rational and sane. Somebody who believes...
People who value life.
Yeah.
If you valued and martyred and get all these things.
Or this will start the event which will lead to the next great movement, you're dealing with people who have a different thought process. So who knows? Interesting times. Interesting times still left this summer, fall, with the calendar of things, with the way world events have happened in the past, and with the fall feasts coming up. I would keep an eye. Had a just off-the-cuff comment. A man came in buying some jewelry and looking to see if there was any silver there. Items that I thought might have any value. And he was basically saying, we need to be prepared for the days ahead. And be prepared as in... to protect our families. But he thought we'd be prepared ahead because economically he looks for things to get Well, and I don't know this gentleman. And I said, yeah. And I said, everybody talks about gold, but I've been looking at silver. And he said, yeah. He said, basically the same. I said, historically, gold used to be about 20 to 1 for a value of it. And now gold is 100 to 1 above silver. Silver was closed about 36 someday. And
silver's right around 30 bucks. Gold's right around 3,000 yeah. bucks.
Well, I think they
value silver. Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. Historically, from what gold and silver has run all the time, silver is 100
yeah.
or 5 times undervalued. Yeah, and the question is why? What are they trying to do? What are they up to? Also a good time to look and take advantage. I like when things... Genesis 16. A story that, in my opinion, fits in with what we're going through and doing, and because if you recall last chapter, what happened in 15?
No.
No, that was 14.
Sorry. The covenant.
Covenant. You will have a seed from your own loins. Not just one born in your house, but your own. So he had a promise. And he believed, and it was counted to him for righteousness. Now, this is one chapter later, although it could have been a period of time. We don't know how long. But definitely could have been a number of years. Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no child. She had a Mizraim female servant, Egyptian female servant, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, see, Yah has kept me from bearing children. Please go into my female servant. It might be that I am built up by her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. Now, why did he listen to the voice of Sarah if God had already promised one would come through his loins? Well, maybe that's why Sarah didn't listen, but it was common practice back then. Like she said, I may be built up through my servant. A child born through the concubine or through the female servant or through the second wife was just as much heir. Remember, the Torah said, whoever the firstborn was, not of your favorite wife, but the firstborn in the line is heir.
So it was seen as like a surrogacy.
Yeah, it was seen, it was not an untoward practice back then. She didn't necessarily do what was unseemly yet. But why did she not believe that God would bring forth seed through Abram's loins?
She didn't believe that God would.
She didn't believe God could do it through her. But she knew, it says, Yah has withheld me from bearing seed. Well, maybe you should have gone there first. Yah, why have you withheld me from bearing seed? What's going on? You promised. But regardless, she went in and Abraham listened to her. And Sarah, Abraham's wife, took Hagar, her female servant, the Mizraim, and gave her to her husband, Abram, to be his wife. And Abram dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. He went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she was conceived, her mistress despised in her eyes. And Abram said to Sarah, my wrong be upon you. I gave my female servant into your bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. Let Yah judge between you and me. So the problem here was Hagar did not see it the same way as Sarah said. Sarah said, let me be built up through her. And instead, Hagar was wanting to usurp the place. Hagar was not wanting it to be a child raised up to
Sarah.
Sarah. Remember, we have Jacob who had Leah and Rachel, and they claimed their concubine, Bilhah and Zilpah. Mm-hmm. They claimed their children, even though the scriptures made a distinction who brought them forth. That was the practice, but yet Hagar basically held it over Sarah. Now the promise has come through me, not through you. Abram said to Sarah, "See, your female servant is in your hand. Do to her what is good in your eye." And Sarah treated her harshly, and she fled from her presence. You weren't supposed to treat your servants harshly, especially the mother of your child.
And said, "You don't treat my wife, your mistress, like this." Instead of just going, "Will you deal with her?"
Yeah, I think he should have stepped in and settled the whole thing. He was the head of the house.
He advocated responsibility.
The same way Sarah got Hagar. How did Sarah obtain Hagar? Because Abraham had abdicated responsibility and said, "Oh, this is my sister." Mm. And the king of Egypt, the Pharaoh at that time, took her to be his wife. And Yah had to step in. And then from that, she received servants and goods, and Abraham did as well. So this again was a continuing on decisions made perhaps way earlier. And where Hagar knew how Sarah had come to obtain her. And I don't know that that was why Yah was shutting the womb, but perhaps Hagar reminded her of things, reminded her of the past. Scripture doesn't tell us completely what that relationship was, but it seems to be contentious. And it seemed to be contentious to the point, again, even Hagar fleeing. That wasn't typical behavior. The messenger of Yah found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, Sarah's female servant, where have you come from and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from the presence of Sarah, my mistress." And the messenger of Yah said to her, "Return to your mistress and humble yourself under her hand." And the messenger of Yah said to her, "I am going to increase your seed greatly, too numerous to be counted." And the messenger of Yah said to her, "See, you are conceiving and bearing a son, and his name shall be called Ishmael, because Yah has heard your affliction. He is to be a wild man, his hand against everyone, and everyone's hand against him, and dwell over against all his brothers."
Today.
So you say, who was Ishmael's descendants today? Most of it is Islamic tribes. This was, you might say, the beginning of the Palestinian conflict, the Middle East conflict, the Muslim conflict. It has been going on quite a long time. And I don't think a peace accord at Camp David is going to settle it. What? It's literally been a blood feud for millennia.
I'll be sure you could get it done.
Yeah. And God has said he named the child, "Your hand's going to be against everyone, and everyone's going to be against you."
Well,
or he named the child Ishmael.
Yeah, I was about to say, I thought Ishmael just meant Yah has heard your affliction, and then going to do.
Well, I may not have his name, but I mean, he destined the child. He spoke what was happening to the child.
Him, or did he already know what was going to happen, so he just told
him? Well, now that gets back into Ms. Ruth's.
This is heads up,
predestination or free will.
Why would he destine one of his own children to go and do all this stuff to his other children?
Why did he say Esau I have hated and Jacob I have loved?
Well, what did you know your other sons?
This is where they were even
born. Well, I know, because born. He's this outside of time. He was able to see what his son did.
So again, the whether he destined them or foretold is irrelevant inside of time, because he said what was going to happen. He speaks the end from the beginning.
But that wasn't my point.
Oh, okay.
By observing, if God is outside of time, mm-hmm. this goes, but if he observes the action, is it then destined to take place that way? So you're, because he already has seen.
Well, and okay, even and, outside and, of time.
In that sense, yes.
Because,
but in the sense of Ishmael, no, because he still has to make those choices. But yes, it's already predestined.
Because he's predestined because
he's
observed.
But he's predestined to make his own choices.
He's predestined.
But also, if it's God who knows everything, whether he's observed it or destined it, could he not have changed it? Could he not
he
have made
have
a difference?
He could have changed it, but then that would take away from all free choice.
He had the opportunity to be different, but...
But Ishmael chose not to.
So, I mean, if you see your son...
Yes.
...about to touch the hot stove, yes. Are you going to intervene in that, or are you going to let him touch it?
I'm going to stop him. But also, let's just say...
So your love is greater
than
God's.
Yeah, but I was going to say, no, I'm not saying... I was about to say... I'm different than God. I don't want to survive and do what God wouldn't do.
So are you saying that you're going to choose to be less godly?
So, I'm just saying, maybe.
So, John, so you just don't want to think this, though?
No.
Free choice?
But, I mean, but...
Maybe that's why he...
Probably.
Well, that gets back to values. Mm-hmm. Some people think free choice is the greatest value. We know a lady who supposedly broke up with her fiance because she found out he was a Calvinist and she was a she was a free willer, and they couldn't reconcile. If that is my highest value, free will, free choice, and you choosing that, then yeah, predestination is terrible.
But I would say that God has intervened in people's free choice. Look at the story of Jonah.
Yes.
That was pretty radical intervention.
Yeah. And I think we see all through history where he's intervened.
And he's also...
I mean, look what he did in Lot. Yeah. And he intervened in Lot's life because of Abraham, not even because of Lot.
Well, they literally dragged him kicking and screaming, basically.
Was it Hezekiah? Who God said, you're going to die.
Yeah.
And he go, please let me live. And he finally relents and says, okay, and has Manasseh. So I'm going to let you have what you want.
And told you that the end's going to be worse.
I believe he does, too.
I don't believe that's hypothetically.
Not hypothetically that he knows everything. But he's going to do all this. But he would... It's not... Knowing that, he's not predestining him to not make...
I would have to think that, again, unless you believe in the multiverse theory, that he has a choice of making or not making. And
what's a multiverse? Because a multiverse?
That's another
dimension. No, I'm saying multi-timeline, and where every choice is played out.
I don't know if every choice is played out, but he sees every choice.
Oh, I think he sees every choice, but I think he already knows which one you're going to make.
So, you lose.
So what I'm saying is the point of him making, not making the decisions, that even though he sees him.
It predestines him to not make those decisions, no, because he saw him. I think it did.
It's been observed.
Okay, he observes him
the
not making
bottom,
the decisions.
The Higgs bottom part, once it's observed, it's set.
He observes him not make the decision. Exactly. So neither of them are preset.
Knowing versus saying he has to do that is forcing him to make those choices.
But it's
choices,
like
but...
The particle coalesce only once. Yes, he can know, but until he sees. Okay, why did God have to go? Did God know Sodom and Gomorrah were evil? But why did he have to go physically look at it himself if he already knew?
He was following his laws.
Because he was following his laws. That's the way he created the universe. It has to be observed.
He follows his own laws. Literally, the Higgs boson particle is God following his own law.
In my opinion. Again, so, he can't punish something he's not a witness of.
Decision.
No, he's already seen the decision they'll make.
Well, has he seen the decision that's already been made? Or does he just already know that he's going to make the decision?
Because Abraham...
Like if a city was bad, you had to send the elders or whatever to investigate.
Withhold Isaac. He said, now I know. How did he not know beforehand? Why? He should have already known if he'd seen the decisions.
So you're saying there's something that God didn't know?
No, he did. But he knew Abraham would, and he knew Abraham wouldn't.
So are you saying knowing versus seeing it come to pass?
I think the only difference in your semantics is time. We're bound by time. God is not. I think you're bounding. God's not bound by time. I think you're trying to bound God. I'm saying he's not.
I'm trying to say...
Well, how could he not know? Because you just bound him by time. Saying he had to wait until that event happened.
That's what y'all said.
No, I'm saying he knew it beforehand.
But he also knew that predestined it beforehand.
Okay, so he knew it all beforehand.
Then how does it, how does that predestine it? How does it predestine it?
Because it's not going to happen different than he knows it. It's not going to happen different than he saw it. It's impossible for it to happen differently than it was observed. Just like the Higgs boson problem. Once it was observed, it's there. And it wasn't before it was there. But once it is, it's there. And it can't change.
Time.
That's time.
So if he's outside the other...
We can't phantom outside of time.
That's going to happen there.
Yes, predestined.
No.
I think we're just talking... Like, we all... Maybe there's some difference. And I think that's what we're arguing over. And you've got...
We come into many things trying to get it to be one way or the other, and you can't, because we're talking about things that are outside of time and inside of time. You can't explain something that's outside of time and inside of time. Right. You can't explain the end from the beginning. That's something I have to know, that God said, I know the end from the beginning, therefore he knows the end from the beginning, even though I can't understand that. She called the name of Yah, who spoke to her, "You are the El who sees," for she said, "Even here I have seen after him who sees me." This is why the well was called Be'er Lahai Roah. I see, it is between Kadesh and Bered. I thought that was interesting. She called Yah the El who sees. And one of the tenet beliefs of Islam is God sees it all and therefore he'll judge at the end. They want to prove by either being martyred, blowing themselves, doing whatever. It's very important that they have those actions at sea. I just found that interesting. Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called his name of his son, who Hagar bore, Ishmael. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram. Okay, how old was he when he bore Isaac?
He's 100.
100, so he's 86 here. So how old was Ishmael when Isaac was born?
14.
That makes a little different.
When's the last? Because that might give us.
Well, the hint we have is back up in verse 3. Sarah, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her freedman servant, to Mizraim, and gave her to her servant, Abram, to be his wife, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan.
So when that happened,
so he had got the promise. He had was told to go walk about the land.
What are y'all trying to figure out? Okay.
What?
We
have a clue that it's been somewhere around 10 years. Now,
okay, so it's 10 years they've flown the land of Canaan. He's 87. He's
86
here.
How old was he when they first got to Canaan?
We can pretty much...
He would have been about 76 if he dwelt in there 10 years. He was 86 when Ishmael was born.
So that's 25 years.
So he's 25.
He would have been about 70, 75.
No, he was 86 when he was born, 100 when I was born. That's 14 years.
Being conceived.
Well, we believe it's somewhere around 10 years because they said he dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. He was told to walk all around the land of Canaan.
So it's been 10 years that was her
idea. We assume so, yeah. 10 years, so the promise hadn't happened yet. Idea. Huh?
Yeah.
What'd you say?
So we passed.
No, he was in the land of Canaan for 10 years.
But
before... We could have said after the 10 years is when... And then Ishmael.
No, I don't think so either. I think it was the first rather soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so I'll tell you, somewhere around 10 years. It ain't happened in the last decade. Let's see what we can do now.
Mm-hmm. They were probably... At this point...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Abraham was 100.
She was 90.
She was 90.
Well, so clearly it wasn't common for women to have children.
Tara...
But I'm trying.
Yeah, Abraham lived 160-something. Abraham's dad lived to be 205.
See, that's what I've never told. I'm not going to strive, and when the flood came...
He lived to, like, 201.
That is his...
That's what he claimed.
That's his
name. No, they don't actually have proof of when he was born.
Okay.
200 years ago, they didn't have a birth certificate.
So it was unverifiable what he claimed.
They look back on...
the stone tablets.
Yeah. No, on Google... And, well, again, even the 120 years, I believe the scripture says only for 120 years will I strive with man. So if you don't strive some of those years with God, if you live a righteous life, would that add toward it? Or is this just basically the wicked are only going to live 120? Anyway, there was definitely 86 when Hagar bore him Ishmael. 100 we know from the story further down the line when Isaac was born. And like I said, it gives a little insight. When Ishmael sneered at, mocked at, scoffed at Isaac, it wasn't an idle threat. We wonder why was Ishmael sent away. Well, Ishmael was A, old enough to do something about it. B, he should have by this time, if he was wanting to be godly, have already known what the prophecies were, already known what God was saying, and be able to accept that. But I think just like his mother, I think he had intentions of the lineage going through him. He had the promises. His seed was going to be numerous, and they are. I think God's promises are without repentance. Interesting to think of what decisions we make and how they affect way, way, way down the road. It lends more credence to what are we doing? And literally, can your decision affect generations to come? We don't just live for ourselves.
No, he says.
Well, and again, like this one, if it's curses to the third or fourth, and then they continue third and fourth, and they continue, and they continue.
Which, if it's a...
Galatians 4. No, our tub. We can hear it all the way from here.
It just sounded like the door. Maybe when the air
could have been. Will you check?
It's dripping on my.
What a glacier.
You want to fall in there.
Galatians 4:21. Say to me, you who wish to be under Torah, do you not hear the Torah? For it has been written that Abraham had two sons, one by a female servant, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the female servant was born according to the flesh, and he of the free woman through promise. Now this is allegorical, for these are the two covenants, one indeed from Mount Sinai, which brought forth slavery, which is Hagar. For this Hagar in Mount Sinai is Arabia and corresponds to Jerusalem, which now is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem above is free, which is the mother of us all. For it has been written, rejoice, O barren, you who do not bear, break forth and shout, you who do not have birth pains. For the deserted one has many more children than she who has a husband. And we, brothers, as Yitzhak was, are of children of promise. But as he who was born according to the flesh then persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit, so also now, what does the Spirit say? Cast out the female. What does the Scripture say? Cast out the female servant and her son. For the son of the female servant shall by no means be heirs with the son of the free woman. Therefore, brethren, we are not children of the female servant, but we are of the free woman. I think it helps if we continue to read the chapters after that, because this would make it seem almost like we shouldn't follow Torah. But first, who was the covenant given to? To Isaac, the free son, or to Ishmael, the servant son?
Abraham.
It was given to Abraham, but when did it, was it given?
Before.
Well, that was not a circumcision. Circumcision came through when Isaac came. Now, Ishmael was circumcised.
Circumcision came before Isaac. Name was changed to Abraham, and Ishmael was 13 years old. He was 14 when Isaac was born.
Okay.
Because so he was given circumcision, his name was changed, and shortly thereafter, Sarah conceived.
The promise came. They say it was not given to.
Now Isaac was the child of the promise and the
birthright. Yeah.
Confused too sometimes. I start like
going, oh, so much. Well, especially afterwards when Esau married Ishmaelites, they did have a mixing of the lines.
Blessed though.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
He was a descendant.
He had descendants, 12 princes, just like Isaac did. And if you look at the Middle Eastern races, Muslim races, whatever you want to know. What?
So on the earthly ring, he has it better.
Yeah, I'm going to say there are more of them than there are Israelites.
Abraham had more sons than just Isaac and Ishmael as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And many of those were blessed and have numerous nations.
And by his wife Keturah, and they said that he gave them many gifts. You know, he set them up well, and he sent them to the east. Again, if you look at the Asiatic peoples.
And many believe he sent them the east and south. Many believe some of the African tribes. What?
I thought those would have been.
What, the Asiatic people or the African people?
Some Europeans that would have been descendant tribes. But then there would have been. Some of the Jewish influence in Africa came through the Ethiopia and King mm-hmm. Solomon.
Queen Sheba.
Sheba went home with just more than he sent her with.
The Cush was a descendant of Ham.
Right.
And Cush means dark. So some believe that father of the darker skinned races, which were Africans. But those ethnicities married into and were influenced by the Israelite people later on through history. So we see, again, the descendants of Abraham joining with the people groups. And it's not
well, like, it would make sense. I mean, they were all kin to each other.
Yeah. And again, we are trying to say, oh, like, you know, it's just this people who marry.
Yeah.
Today we have, okay, if you have an Italian man marry a Mexican woman, what is their child? Mex-Italian?
It's a Mex.
If you,
it's like, Tex-Mex pizza.
You know, if you had an American woman marry an Irish man, what does their children look like?
Well, it's not a woman. It's the race.
No, my
little
less.
So
he's a little quarter Irish.
So what does that, again, the descendants of the ethnicities are not quite as rigid as statisticians make them. Statisticians like to have nicely defined borders. People are way too peoply to be put in nice little groups.
From when the Babel split.
Exactly.
I believe chapter 5 is speaking to, A, they're speaking to the Galatians, and do we know who the Galatians are? Galatia.
Galatia.
And where were they derived from?
Entirely short.
Galatia would have been around Turkey, I believe.
Right, it's around Turkey. And what was Galatia known for? Galatia was known for sticking to their own culture, not totally assimilating. They were one of the last ones assimilated, conquered by Rome, and eventually became Hellenized like much of the rest of the world.
Were they the Gothic?
They were actually more of the, I think, of the Celtic. I don't know. Anyway, they clung to their own traditions and religions. And Paul's speaking here because I think they wondered more than a lot of Gentiles, do we need to adopt all the tradition and things of the Jews, because that was an important thing in their culture. Let's keep the old ways. You have to follow the old ways. Don't assimilate. And so as they came into the church, there was dissension over how much of the law do we need to keep. Well, you don't need to keep any of the law. Salvation isn't through the law. That's what Paul's saying here. Salvation is through Messiah, 100%. But if you read the rest of 5 and you read 6, what does chapter 6 start off with?
Brothers.
Brothers what? Read the next. If a man's overtaken in such trespasses, how can there be trespasses if there's no Torah still? Paul says without Torah I would not have known sin. What tells us what trespasses are? So how could Paul, 2 verses later, be saying there is no Torah?
Well, in verse 2, I think part of Galatia's problem, community, that it wasn't enough to follow Torah and believe in Yeshua, that you had to become a
you
Jew
had to be,
first.
And like, you had to be circumcised, you had to be and that resonated with the Galatian people because they already had a history of, we're not going to assimilate with everyone else, we're going to stick to the traditions and the old ways. And so, yes, that the Judaizers found a toehold here of people who want to fully embrace. In my opinion, Judaism did not embrace Judaism because what was the central tenet of Judaism?
Law.
What?
How much?
Mm-hmm. No, that's of what Judaism had become. What was it supposed to be? Yeah.
Being a light to the nations.
Being a light to the nations. And that one day, Messiah would come. But what's the things they reject?
Messiah.
What?
Israel. He was saying later on that
Well, again,
they weren't keeping Torah.
They weren't keeping Torah. Talmudic like circumcision made you break Torah. Which is why he said, don't go to them. Even Messiah said, you search the world over and find one, and by the time you're through with him, he's twice the child of Gehenna than he was before.
And there
that was the circumcision process. So Messiah was Messiah against circumcision?
No.
Was Messiah circumcised?
Yes.
He was against what it had become. Was Paul against circumcision?
No.
He took Timothy and had him circumcised. But what was he against? The process. Just like today, when you rail against, what are we railing against? We're railing against the man. Yes, we don't want to stand up for the machine, the mechanism, the man, the things that are there. We want the purity, the truth of the word. If you read on through 5, he said, Torah summed up in what? Loving your neighbor as yourself. Already what Messiah said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, love your neighbor as yourself. On this hangs all the law and the prophets. But we cannot learn to love our neighbor as ourselves without Torah that tells us how to love our neighbor as ourselves.
Because in their house now.
Well, or that love is love. We have to have something we can agree that tells me the roadmap of how to live my life. So I know to expect, here's what Simeon is going to do, and Simeon knows to expect, here's what I'm going to do. And we can hold each other accountable. Simeon, you say this is what you're going to do, but it doesn't look like you're doing that. Not to try to judge Simeon, not to try to condemn Simeon. Simeon's already forgiven that. But to try to help Simeon because Simeon supposedly said, this is what I want to do. And then the same with me. Simeon come to me and say, Gerald, you supposedly want to live this way, but I don't see you living that way. And it won't be contention. I'm not going to get mad at him for pointing out the error because I'm going to be happy he pointed out the error. The whole purpose of it was yes. And in the end, for the very beginning, what was the purpose of Torah given to Israel? So that they could be a light. So that others would see and say, who is a God like this that talks to them, that shows them, that tells them? I have heard it said, the Jews have to keep the law. Why? They're God's chosen people. They're supposed to live peculiar. They were supposed to be set apart.
But it really is kind of like an insult. We're the favored child. We get the law was done away with. They have, is there something wrong with them?
Except for Paul, Peter. What did Peter say about us? We were a chosen people, a
nation,
royal priesthood, a peculiar people. If you read through the Old Testament, all the words that it was described of Israel and what they were to be to the nations, Peter used those words to describe the church and what we were to be. We want to be a peculiar people, but we don't want to live peculiarly. Well, y'all don't eat catfish, that's peculiar. Yes, it is.
Yeah. If we are grafted into Israel, that makes us part of them. So we would be.
Well, and that's like what that. Paul said. The branches don't tell the root what to do. The branches are grafted into the root. And be careful, because if God doesn't spare the natural branches who weren't acting like they were grafted into the root, what do you think he's going to do to you wild branches that were grafted in? We're admonished all throughout the Scripture, old and new, not to be Israel after the flesh, but to be Israel after the Spirit. Those who were Israel after the flesh were warned, don't be Israel after the flesh. Well, how could that be when they were Israel after the flesh? because they were always supposed to be Israel after the Spirit. You see that even in the wilderness between those who believed and those who did not, those who obeyed and those who did not. Those who had been delivered from Egypt did not get them into the promised land. Did not keep them from the ground opening up and them being sucked down. Did not keep the fiery serpents from biting them and they died. It has always been not Torah, but belief in whether they knew exactly what Messiah was or not, but belief that Yah has a way and that I am going to keep that way. Maybe we see better now, or worse now. Maybe we know a little more now. I believe that's what it says, that by grace are we saved through faith, that not of yourself. It is still that belief, that hope, that yearning, that righteousness, and that one day he's going to come back and set all this right. One day we'll be delivered from this flesh that so easily besets us. One day. Why? Because he said it. And it's been predestined that we can choose that. Father, thank you for your laws. Thank you for your guidance. Thank you for your instructions. Thank you for your promises. Thank you for your prophecies. But may I take those things and hold them up to your word. May I hold those things up to the full counsel of God. And even then, can I leave room that your ways are not my ways? Father, may I not compromise, because you told us that Jesus is the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father. So I know that all paths don't lead. It matters how we get there. But Jesus, you said that you had other sheep that we know not of. I don't have the knowledge you have. May I worry about my life and the things you put into my hand and the things you tell me. And may I let my light so shine before my good works and glorify. May I learn.